Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week's topic we'll be speaking about the halachas of Chalav Stam, Chalav Akum, Gvinas Yisrael, Gvinas Akum. Can you use an internet camera for Chalav Yisrael? If you don't eat Chalav Stam, can you still eat Miller's cheese? Is cheese different? Can you be Simach and Ramosha's Heta? This is Chikava Q Chila in the United Arab Emirates, where they actually do have camels. We'll be speaking about Reb David Feinstein when he speaks about how all the candies in his house, the chocolates, are in Chalav Yisrael.
We're also going to have a clip. We spoke to Reb Herschel Shechter, the Gaon Rashid of Bitzvah Elchanan, whether if you drink Chalav Yisrael, do you have any advantage, the guy with the shiloh of Sirchus, of the behemoth being a trefa. And we're also going to ask him, in light of the coronavirus, how the plague seems to be intensifying now, if somebody is concerned and the only shul he has to go to is one that they're davening indoors, is he better davening either outside or be a chidus? We're going to have a parashal shacht about those two nekudas.
Our guests will be Rabbi Moshe Elephant. He's the head of kashrus for the OU, the largest kashrus and most reliable kashrus organization in the world. We'll be speaking to, in Hungary, Rabbi Baruch Oberlander about the Chabad Shita, about Chalav Yisrael. Should be a really interesting program. Before we go to our program, I want to speak about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You know, I get greetings, I work. So I get greetings from all my non-Jewish acquaintances, and they call me up, or they'll see me, they'll say, Happy New Year! Because they're trying to be polite, it's Rosh Hashanah. Or how was your New Year? Now, it's hard to explain to them, but Rosh Hashanah is very different than January 1st. We don't drop a ball in shul. Meshikitzach nishtan. But rather, it's utshuva tfilot stakam avirinus raya hagzera. It's about forgiveness, cleaning up the past. Slach lanu, mechal lanu, kapar lanu. Why do we start our new year this way? Why not with all that simcha? Mitzvah gedayla liyais besimcha. Why not start it the same way? You know, the Jews are the most productive people in the world. What do they say? 30% of Nobel Prizes to a nation that's a rounding error, less than what, you know, fraction of a percent. They say a story. There were once two hikers climbing up a mountain, and one is sweating and huffing and puffing, and the other one is like whistling and running up the mountain. So somebody interviews them, and they're both carrying all their assorted knapsacks. So he says to the one who's huffing and puffing, he says, what do you have in your knapsack? He says, well, in my front knapsack, I have my provisions, my food, my water, my ropes. He says, "What? And your the knapsack on your back?" He says, that's where I put all my regrets, you know, the things I did wrong, my worries, etc. I got to carry that around with me. And they go to interview the guy who's whistling, and they say, hey, what do you have in your knapsack? He says, the same like him. I have my ropes, my, you know, food. He says, what about the back knapsack? He says, that, I cut a hole in the bottom of it, and whatever I put in just falls out. And you know what? Things are really lighter. I climb much faster. And I think that's really a really good analogy. I want to talk about regret, guilt. Charata in Lashon Kodesh comes from charita, which means to carve. Churtin es ha'egel. They were carving out the shape of the egel, Chazal say. I think it's Pirkei Rabbi Elazar. What does it mean to cut? Charata, it cuts, it hurts. We get eaten up by regret. Do you know that doctors say that people who are filled with regrets, not only can't they go further, not only don't they have room, they spend so much time, it's like a cycle that goes around in the head, they die young. They get ulcers, all kinds of machlis, and also cancers. So the question is, if Rosh Hashanah is about letting go, starting with a clean slate, having that rear knapsack with a hole on the bottom, how do we do it? What do we do about those things? I have callers. Here's a fellow, Ruvain, called me. He was telling me he gambled so much. He got divorced. He said, I gambled so much. I played around. I did so many Dvarim Mesurim. He says, now, I'm filled with regret. Or I spoke to a fellow by the name of Yussel. He's telling me how he treated his wife so horribly. She left him. And he says he feels really guilty now. He says he really abused her, not physically, but emotionally, neglected her, didn't take care of her needs, you know, didn't pay the bills, etc. A girl, Sarat, leaves a message. And she wants me to speak about, she says she's dating. And she's not, she says she opened up her heart to one boy who she liked. And she was honest and forthcoming and didn't play any games. And he dumped her. And she says, and now she just can't open up anymore. And she's just filled with regret about the way she sort of let her guard down and let this boy sort of see her, you know, and take advantage in a way of her emotionally. These are the types of regrets, and there are so many more. You know, the Torah talks about all these things. Where do we first find regret in the Torah? It doesn't take very long, this emotion regret. It's all over the place. But let's just start. First place, Nichamti ki asisim. The Rabbeinu Shalom says, I regret that I made man. He was a sinner. He was really bad, right? The Dora Mabel. And he did. What did Hashem do? He basically threw the whole world into an ocean. He threw all mankind into the water. They all drowned. It did not end very well, that regret. Let's talk about Noach. Noach, the Zohar HaKadosh says, it's the Pirush Damesik Eliezer. The name Noach comes from the Chama. Zois Yenachameinu. So he says, but Noach also had terrible regrets. What were the regrets of Noach? Noach could have saved the world. Noach was the person who could have stopped the first Holocaust. He built the Teva. He was entrusted with stopping the Holocaust. But he didn't throw his heart into it. You know, the Kimeiz Noach Zaisli, the Torah sort of Tanakh criticizes him. They call it Mei Noach. It seems his heart really wasn't in it. He was sort of a little bit negligent. They're called Mei Noach. And what does Noach do with his regret? He comes out of the Teva. He knows he could have stopped the Holocaust, and he really becomes a shikar. He's the first abuser of substances. He didn't deal with regret very well, too. What does it say the Rabbeinu Shalom did after the Mabel? He says he created a rainbow, a colored rainbow, and he says, every time I have this nichamtim, I'm going to think of the bow, and I'm not going to do anything. And what's the secret of the bow that could help you and me? The father who said to me, I had such a wonderful son. I didn't stop him when he started bringing home books by Dawkins and Hitchens and Harris, all the Kaifrim. And then he just never learned another word. And he went OTD. And the father sat, mamish crying. What's learned from the rainbow, the Rabbeinu Shalom's way to solve regret? What's the message? There are two types of regrets. There's the regret of aiming too high. That deal that you went into, you thought you were going to conquer the world. You opened your heart. Sarah opened her heart. The father who thought, I could have an open house. It doesn't go well. You aim too high. There's another regret, the regret of Noach, the regret of negligence. I think the bow talks to both of them. How does a bow and arrow work? The bow sitting there can do nothing. It's when you pull back and you create stress, and you aim high, and you shoot, that's when the bow can go. So if you do nothing with a bow, you can't have any accidents. You can't shoot somebody, break a window. You just do nothing. But then you don't really get anywhere. So some regrets, they're really good to have them. Like, isn't it better to spend the life aiming high and missing sometimes, than always aiming low and never missing? Like, what would you like it to say, Ani Matseva? Here's the guy who never took a chance, who never dreamed, who never, right? So what does it say, the bow? The Rabbeinu Shalom, when he came down from his, you know, that silos we can't imagine, from his infinity, and he was mitzamtim himself because he said, Olam chesed yibane. I want Ein Melech B'liyam. I want to create something amazing. And how am I going to do it? Of the entire endless neverness that we can't be masig, I'm going to create something that has bechira, that has really the ability to hurt kaviyachal, to be chas v'shalom, to be a mevarich es Hashem, right? So he aimed high. He created bechira. It didn't work out. It created a marble. Rabbi Shalom said, you know what? I'm going to think of the bow. It's better to shoot high and sometimes miss than just never to dream, never to think. So some regrets, they come from roimimus, not from shiflus. You opened up your heart. That's wonderful. Because the next boy or the third boy, somebody will say yes. It's better than staying single and not creating. And what about the other regrets? Nayach dropped the ball big time, right? But you know what? The rainbow is colored. Often when we look back at our failures, we look back at them in black and white. I messed up. I was an idiot. How could I have made that mistake? But you know, it's much more complicated than that. In that time, in that place, there may have been different family issues, economic issues, political issues. Like, it's really hard to look back at a time and say it's black and white. Maybe in that situation, you would do it all over again. It's hard to know that. Give yourself some leeway. Think of the colors, the different lights that we can see things, the different glasses and prisms that we see things from. So when we go to start a new year, Klal Yisrael, Bechira Umais, Ata Bechartanu Mikol Amim, our new year is different. How does our new year start? Not with drinking or dropping balls. It's by letting go of the past. Today, I went down to the river with my mother, Tzalanga Yaron, and we did an ancient custom, a very holy custom. I stood by the water, and I said, Mikael Kamecha, the 13 midas of forgiveness, and I threw them into the water, my regrets. Many thousands of years ago, before the rainbow, the Ribbono Shel Olam threw man into the water. He threw humanity, creation, Kol HaYakum into the water. He taught us something different. He said, now, on Rosh Hashanah, we stand on dry land, and we throw our regrets into the water because we know the secret of the rainbow. I want to wish my listeners a Gmarach Sima Tova, a good Kibenshjar, and I want to ask you for forgiveness. I'm sure I've offended many of you. You know, we speak about some interesting topics here. And Kishem Shem Partzufeim Shavais, my opinions are very often going to be different, and it should be that way. But really my job here is to try to get people discussing, thinking. If I offended you, I ask your forgiveness. And now for our riddle of the week. The Rambam in Perek Gimel of Hilchos Tshuva, Halacha Gimel, famously paskins that when a person dies, they weigh, he comes up to the heavenly gates, and they weigh, more averis, more mitzvahs. More mitzvahs, you get in, more averis, you don't. And he says the same thing, b'chol shano shana, kol ha'olam, right, is weighed on Rosh Hashanah. Misha nimtza tzadik, nechtem l'chaim. Misha nimtza rasha, nechtem l'misa, v'habenuni tluyim ois toilun ois yadjayim kippurim. And what is it? Im tchuyosav, you see, which one is more? Im asa tshuva nechtam l'chaim, vim lav nechtam l'misa. The Rambam says that the way every person is weighed on Rosh Hashanah, more mitzvahs, on Yom Kippur, more mitzvahs, more averis, and he implies more averis, no good, more mitzvahs, nechtam l'chaim. Frechtevelt, there's two ways. If you have a scale that's 50-50, there's two ways to change the scales. One is take off a few averis. One is add on a few mitzvahs. Why does the Rambam seem to imply that the only way to do it is through tshuva? Guys should say, look, if it's 50-50, I'm not going to do tshuva. I'm going to spend today at my local chesed organization packing boxes for Yom Tov, and that'll tip the scales. That is our riddle of the week. Why does Rambam say it's tshuva that makes the difference, that tips the scales? Let's go to our wonderful guests.
have the great honor of having Hagoyin Reb Herschel Shechta, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and he's also in the OU, Paskins, I imagine, most of the daily Shilas. We're doing a show on Chol of Yisrael, and we had a Rav from Hungary bring up a very important point. He said, and he mentioned your name, that was Meredith, he said that today, besides the Pri Chadash and the and Reb Moshe, there's a different Shila. They give some type of injections into the cows, and what it does is it creates, it makes them treifus. So now it's not just a shayla of Chol of Yisrael, you're drinking Chol of Treifa, and he says by Chol of Yisrael, cows, you don't have this problem. And then he mentioned you don't drink milk, so I asked him, said, why doesn't the Rosh Yeshiva Shlita drink Chol of Yisrael milk? So he didn't know the answer, so we said, let's ask you.
Well, the reason why I don't drink milk is the following. We know that there's a certain percentage of cows that have sirchus on the lungs. And the slaughterhouses all keep records of this. So in America, Rabbi Soloveitchik told us that over 60 years ago, I heard this. So he said that he used to give the hashgach on the slaughterhouse in Boston. And he said he used to use all the coolest on the books, plus more, to be mekel on sirchus on the lungs. He told us he used to use coolus from the Alter Rebbe, from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, about sirchus. And with all the coolus on the books, it came out that his slaughterhouse had 14% of all of the animals that they shechted had sirchus on the lungs that he couldn't be mekel on. Then he was complaining that the Gladkosher slaughterhouse at that time in the 1940s only had 9%. How is that possible? If he's mekel on everything under the sun, and he has 14%, how can Gladkosher have only 9%? So he said, you see, it's Gladtreif. It's not Gladkosher. There was a footnote. So if 14% of all the cows are treifus, so if you milk one cow, the Gemara says you go basaroi. If you don't know whether it's a treifa or not, so you assume that it's not a treifa. But in America, they mix together all the milk. So 14% of all the milk is treifa. So 14%, so you don't have shishim. And even in Eretz Yisrael, it's 7%. In Eretz Yisrael, the percentage of sirchus is 7%. And Rabbi Neuber told us there was a period of time, Rabbi Neuber from Nishmer Shabbos Kolchasa told us there was a period of time that he used to travel to Argentina to supervise the shchita for the flesh that they used to import from Argentina to Eretz Yisrael. He said when he was supervising, it was only 5% of the animals at sirchus. But 5% also, you don't have beetle berel, you don't have shishim. You know, with your eyes closed, that way more than 2% of all of the milk is chol of treifa, and the din is that you need shishim in order to be mevatel treifa milk. You need shishim.
So kfayt hagayin shvita. How did they ever drink milk in history then? I mean, the circus today haven't changed.
No, but this is a new thing that they mix all the milk together. Europeans told me that they remembered in Europe as children. The mother would send them to the Goyisha farm, and they would watch. They would bring a bucket, and the Nochri farmer would milk the cow, and they would take the milk home. So they only milked one cow.
Good, but even one cow, you have the same odds. There's a 14% chance that it's straight.
That's a din, you go bust a
rye. Oh, you go bust a rye, you mean, but once already they mixed it.
Right, the last 100 years, I think, they mix all the milk together. So you have a taruvis, and a taruvis, you have to have shishim.
So there's no difference in this between a Chol of Yisrael farm or a non-Chol of Yisrael farm.
That's the problem. So remember, once the OU had, it has every year, every other year, they have a seminar for B'nai Yeshiva, B'nai Kolelim, who are interested in going into kashrus. Sometimes they have for women who are interested in going to kashrus. So in one of these, so there every day, they had said it was a whole week long. And people came from Mexico, from California, from Europe. They came from all over to the OU office. So every day of the week, they took them to a factory, they took them to a farm, took them this, that, and the other thing. Friday was a half a day, so they had me speak on Friday because I have nothing to demonstrate. So I was talking about abstract things, about kashrus and other things. So I mentioned this issue, how can you drink milk? So one of the B'nai Torah was a shtickle, a wise guy, so he screams out, the milk is kosher, Rav Moshe Feinstein drank the milk. So I said, I agree the milk is kosher, I'm just asking why. Why is it kosher? So that was on Friday. So that Sunday night, I attended a wedding, and the two sons of Rav Moshe Feinstein were present by the chuppah. So I walked over to them, and I told them what happened. Someone said, Rav Moshe drank the wine and the milk. Obviously, it's kosher. So they both said, yes, their father drank milk. Now, David Feinstein said, maybe the percentage of trephis by dairy cows is lower than the percentage of trephis by the regular steer and the bulls that they shecht. So I said, no, it's even higher. Because they tell me that because they milk the cows three times a day, in Europe they used to milk them once a day, now they milk them three times a day. So the whole career of a dairy cow is only 3-4 years maximum, because they develop sirchus, and they're overgrown with sirchus. Over 98% of them had sirchus. Nothing to discuss. Not trying to remove the sirchus. So it's tamakasha. How can you drink milk even if you milk only one cow? If they say that 98% of all the behemoths, after a couple of years, they're all overgrown with sirchus.
So I have a question for the Rav. Is it possible, right, and this is a very complex shaila, they milk a cow, and then they put it into a pail, and then it goes into a bin. When the cow is milked, if you would drink from this, you would say, yes, you go bus a rive. You go bus a rive, it has a din of kosher.
Right.
Since each one is nifsak that it's kosher, even when you put it into a taruvis, right, you have the shari dura, etc., that says that you it's not chayz of anir, and you go basa mei kari, it's a big planta in the paiskim, but since each one at the time becomes kosher, so when you ma'ar of them together, you ma'ar of everything that's kosher.
Right, right. So this was an issue. Rabbi Asher Weiss has a brother who's, I think...
in Montreal, we've had him on.
Has one brother, and then he has another brother who married the Kleusenberger Rebbe's daughter, I think.
Right.
So I think he's the editor of the Torah journal that the Kleusenberger Chassidim put out. So several years ago, maybe over 10, a little over 10 years ago maybe, he wrote up this Shiloh in the Kleusenberger Torah journal, and he asked people to write the comments, response. So Rabbi Asher Weiss wrote that, and then he later reprinted it in his Sefer Minchas Osher on Chumash, Shmoyis, on the Pasuk Acharav Lahatas, that you learn at Bidla. So that's what he said, that's what many said. But the Shaila is, this idea doesn't say in Yeridah. This doesn't say that since we go Basaroiv, so later on when it falls into Taruvis, even though, you know, with your eyes closed, that 14% of all of the milk is trefer, because you mix together the milk from 100 cows, mix together a lot of milk. But
Kveder Hashiva, I think we use this halacha in a lot of areas. And let me give you an example. Let's say a Kohen wants to go to Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
There's a shaila if there's a mace on the plane.
Okay.
So the question is, from two sides, when somebody puts the mace on, l'chayri's overlift the iver to all the kayanim that are on the plane.
Yeah, sure. It's a big problem.
Right?
Yeah.
So one of the solutions is you say like this. Every person who comes on, right, it's a Safik Kayin, Safik Yisrael. You're paskin that is Yisrael, you go bus arrive. Now that there's 500 people on the plane, each one was oiske paskin to had right to, so even though in the 500, it's almost mathematically unfeasible that there's not going to be one Kayin, right,
yeah,
when they're 12% of the crowd, the Safik is noilid when each one enters. When each one enters, it's paskin lakula. So therefore, the Chevra Kaddish, you could put a mace on the plane at that time.
I would think that that's also highly, highly questionable.
So then how do Kohanim go to Eretz Yisrael?
The Kohen knows that the Reiv is at the plane. How can the Kohen go on the plane?
Yeah.
He knows
yeah.
that the Reiv is that there's going to be a mace.
But how could the Chevra Kaddisha put it on the plane?
And Achinami, I would think it's not permissible. That's why
I'm saying all the Mesim that go to Eretz Yisrael are done by Issa.
Yeah, it's a problem. They have a special flight.
Yeah, but
they had a special flight that they never took Mason. Once a week.
I'm asking Rashiva every day when we sent our father to Eretz Yisrael. Sending to Eretz Yisrael is machlokes apaiskim, whether it's good or it's bad. One thing's for sure, but misasa you makayim lift the iver for all the kahanim on the plane. That's a chiddush to say that, no?
Talk a big problem. So Moshe Feinstein has tshuvas, and others right. Since it's in the cargo section, so maybe the floor is chotzitz b'fnei atuma. So that's a shaila of oil zaruk. Oil zaruk
yeah.
Is not chaytzis b'fnei atuma. So some argue the point oil zaruk is not chaytzis b'fnei atuma. If there's a mace buried in the ground and I'm in the plane, so me, I'm in the plane, can egged the ground, that's oil zaruk. But the whole plane is moving, me with the mace. So my relationship to the mace stays the same. The mace is in the cargo section, I'm upstairs. There is such an opinion in the Rishon. I think they quote the Meiri he has like that. But Taisa doesn't agree with that. Taisa holds that even they're both flying in the air together. It's still called in a boat. Let's say you have a boat and there's a mace. So if the mace is in the ocean and the coin is in the boat, then the floor of the boat is an El Zarek. But what if the mace is also on the boat? So the mace with the chai, they're all moving together. Maybe that's not called El Zarek. One is not moving away from the other. So that's a machlokes. Pashta says, we say, lachachmer on that. It's not a problem. It's not right.
Let me ask the Rav, I would be over baltashkes if I didn't get in a few more shilas, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So, coronavirus, Yom Kippur. A person has a choice. The only minion he has is an indoor minion. It's spreading, like, I just spoke to my chavrus in Eretz Yisrael. He said his brother-in-law just died of corona. He said a young fellow. Yeah. We know the Rav of Yerushalayim, he was 56. Another chavrus of mine's brother, he said he was healthy, skinny. The Rav of Yerushalayim, Rav Nevinsal's son, died of coronavirus.
Yeah.
My wife's aunt. So he has a choice. He could daven inside, spaced, etc., or he could daven b'yechidus and not be nichnas into the asafik sakana. What would the Rav paskin?
I would daven b'yechidus.
If there's no outdoor minion.
Yeah, but you have to look for trouble.
Joining us from New York is Rabbi Moshe Elephant. He's the chief operating officer and the rabbinic coordinator of the OU, of the Kashrus division of the OU. He also says the largest Daf Yomi share, I believe, in the world on the OU's site. He gets 1,000 to 2,000 listeners a day. So he's a tremendous Maribitz Torah. Welcome, Rabbi Moshe.
Thank you, Rabbi Lichtenstein. Certainly you are also a Gevaldig Maribitz Torah, maybe even more than I, because everybody loves to listen to your program. And you should have a Gemara Chesima Tova, you and your Mishpach and all of Klal Yisrael.
Amen. So let's talk about Chalav Akum, or Chalav Stam. Can you give us a brief, because I'm going to get into some of the details. In other words, I would like to walk through Chalav Stam. I would like to talk about cottage cheese, cream cheese, hard cheese that's made with Chalav Stam. Could there halachically possibly be more kill to eat, let's say, you know, Miller's cheese than drinking Chalav Stam? But could you just give the Olam a brief, you know, overview of the Chashash, the Prichadash, the Chsam Seif, and Ramesha? Give us like a 5-minute overview and then we'll get into the details.
So we all know that the Gemara Masechet Avodah Zarah tells us that Chalav Shechol Akum, milk that was milked by an Akum, we may not drink. Chazal were concerned that Shema Iraboy Dovatame, that maybe somebody on the farms, which was certainly the case in the times of Chazal, where there were on many different types of animals, kosher and non-kosher animals on the farm who could give milk, and that milk, if they mixed in non-kosher milk, adulterated it with the kosher milk, would obviously be non-kosher. And because of that, Chazal made a gzera that the milk could only be, we could only consume milk if it was done with Yisrael Re'ehu, with a Jew, a religious Jew, witnessing the milking of the cow. That's the halacha as established in the Shulchan Aruch. There are many halachas that go around it. I don't know if now is the time and place. Do you have to have a Jew actually in the milking parlor, or is it satisfactory if the Jew sees that the milking parlor only has kosher animals and sees that all of the pails, going back to the time of Chazal, all of the pails were clean with no other leftover milk in them, then they don't actually have to be there. Certainly the halacha allows for a level of mirsis. That means if a Jew is, again, not actually on the farm, but did the proper examination before the milking took place and is in the vicinity of the farm, that would be adequate to make it be considered what is known, what the Shulchan Aruch calls Chol of Yisrael. What happened in later years is that farming, milking became much more sophisticated, and the milk farms that had milk, cow's milk, typically only had cow's milk. And the question then is, does the rule of Chol of Yisrael still apply only when there's no concern when the offer non-kosher animals on that farm.
And Rabbi Elephant, can I interrupt? And I would say that I imagine that it's incredibly unlikely that that camels are milked in the United States for any commercial reason, or that pigs are milked. And there's very few animals that can be milked. So
the only animal that I've heard being milked, I never heard of anybody drinking pig milk. You're 100% right, Reb David. I never heard about it. There is discussion about camel's milk. It's certainly not milked in the United States. Camels don't really, there aren't too many camels in the
United States.
The United States altogether. And if they are, they're probably in a zoo, not on a farm. It's interesting, you know, how the whole world is connected to halacha. So now, just last week, we got an email at the OU because of what's going on with the peace with the United Arab Emirates, Dubai, where there are many cows. Will you be able to drink Chol of Stam in Dubai? Because there is a lot of camel milk. That was a question that we already asked last week. But there's a very important factor, not going out of the sequence that you wanted me to go through. And even those who milk camels, the camel's milk is so much, much more expensive than cow's milk. There's nobody that would want to adulterate cow's milk with camel's milk. You may find it the other way, that somebody would want to adulterate camel's milk with cow's milk.
And to add on, a female cow will produce 20,000 pounds of, this is from Google, 20,000 pounds of milk in her lifetime. So cows are very industrious and very, very productive.
Right. And they're made to give milk. People have dairy cows. That's all that they have the cows there for. To eat, give milk, eat and give milk. That's all they do. I've seen such farms myself. So what happened was, as the world changed, I'm talking about 2020. I'm talking about hundreds of years ago already. The world changed and farms were dairy farms with cows exclusively to give milk. So the question is, where there's nothing else on the farm besides cows, which are kosher animals, giving milk, does the rule of Chol Yisrael, as we described it, still apply?
Because there's nothing else to put in.
So right. That was the Shaila that came up. And as you correctly stated, it's essentially a machloikis, the Pri Chadash, and the Chasam Sofer. And the Pri Chadash is the opinion that's lenient for the obvious reason. The Chasam Sofer is machmer. Now, the reason the Chasam Sofer is machmer, the Chasam Sofer wasn't arguing on the Metzias, on the reality. The reality is that I don't think the Chasam Sofer would disagree that when you buy a bottle of milk, a carton of milk, that's cow's milk, the Chasam Sofer is not going to tell you that I think there's camel's milk in there or there's the pig's milk in there. The reality is the Chasam Sofer doesn't need our haskama, but he knew that. The Chasam Sofer had a different approach. And it's a fundamental approach. It's not a Chol Yisrael approach. It's an approach to the way he looks at all of Gezeiros Chazal. The way the Chasam Sofer looked at Gezeiros Chazal is that once Chazal make a Gezeira, then the halacha is the gzeira remains the gzeira remains the gzeira, even if the reason for the gzeira should fall away. And therefore, the Chasam Sofer felt that once the Gemara established, Chazal established, that there's a chiyuv, there's an obligation to have a mashgiach watch the milking of the milk or whatever system is required to make it Chol of Yisrael, that becomes the halacha forever, even if all of the reasons for the halacha or the circumstances around which the halacha was established fall away. And that's the machlokes, the Chasam Sofer and the Pri Chadash, and in Europe particularly, even till this day, because I've had these conversations with Rabbonim in Europe, which aren't necessarily, we know, in most of Europe certainly, there aren't very strong Jewish communities like we have here in America or in Eretz Yisrael. But this Chasam Sofer, for some reason, everybody has been very concerned not to fall away from that Chasam Sofer to keep that minig chadash osam and atayra. The Chasam Sofer said a gzera is a gzera. The truth of the matter is, we probably could have a separate conversation. Not, I know it's not today's subject, about gzeras chazal, and it goes both ways. I recently, just to go off the subject for a half a minute, I recently gave a shiur. Many people wear watches, years ago, particularly if you remember, we all had these digital watches that if you press them on the side, the light would go on, the different bells and whistles would go on. And the question is, are you allowed to wear such a watch on Shabbos? Because there's a real concern that you may touch one of the buttons on the side. And most Paiskim, Ramosh is very clear about this, Rav Shlomo Zalman felt this way, held that we don't make our own gezeiros. Chazal were able to make gezeiros, we don't make gezeiros. So I'm convinced, this is a personal opinion, that if we live today in the time of Chazal, they would probably tell you you could drink all milk, and they would probably tell you you can't wear that watch on Shabbos. But we don't make our own gezeiros. So
I do want to point out something that, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, that the Chasam Sofer says it's a gzeira, but this gzeira, there's no mocker for it before the Chasam Sofer. In other words, by gvina, we're...
No, the way the Chasam Sofer is learning Pshat in the Mishnah, I think.
Yeah, but
I think
but
that's
nobody,
the way the Chasam Sofer is learning Pshat in the Mishnah and the Gemara.
I'm saying, but nobody mentions this concept of loy plug before the Chasam Sofer, whereas Lamashal, the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam do bring, let's say, by cheese...
I'll tell you why I think that may not be such a strong argument.
I'm just stating a fact.
I'll tell you why I think. I'll tell you what I think. And
yeah.
Again, it's a very. The point you make is for sure accurate. I'll tell you what I think. I think that we find it in the Gemara. That they were mammoth, that they made cheese. We haven't spoken about cheese yet, but they made cheese not only with animal rennet. They were mammoth basavim. They did make cheese with what we would call microbial rennet with grass or whatever. The Gemara calls them mammoth basavim. So the Rishonim already had to address that circumstance, what is the halacha? But like we discussed a couple of moments ago, in the time of Chazal, everybody had a little farm in their backyard with all sorts of animals. It really didn't become, until the world became industrial, I think.
Yeah, but Rabbi Elephant, even in the Rishonim, this is discussed. For example, the Mordechai that the Chasam Sofer quotes discusses what happens in a place where you don't have a behemoth tmeya be'edorei. Rabbeinu Peretz comments that the Beis Yosef brings in Kuftes, so I have comments on this Mordechai that you should be machmir, even if there's no behemoth tmeya be'edorei, and he says, why? Because maybe he put something in the kli that he bought someplace
that's
else.
What always, that's what I mentioned. You have to check
so
the kli always.
So my point is that clearly it was discussed that ein behemoth be'edorei in the Rishonim, and not a single Rishon says loy plug, whereas by cheese they do say loy plug. So
okay.
I'm just pointing out that the Chasam Sofer is the first one, and the Chasam Sofer lived in the... you know, in the 1700s to bring the concept here of loy plug, but notwithstanding that, in Europe, people were machmir, as all the chassidim are, and all the b'nai
Torah
today
are
machmir like the Chasam Sofer, not like the Pri Chadosh, who says, look, today there's no camels in America, period. There's no shashi going to be mar. But
so that was the machloikus of the Chasam Sofer and the Pri Chadosh. Ramosha, and it's important to make this point, because Ramosha is not accepting the opinion of the Pri Chadosh. You know, we've had this discussion numerous times when different shailos came up. You know, it's not correct to say, well, Ramosha is accepting the Pri Chadosh's opinion. Ramosha is not accepting the Pri Chadosh's opinion. Ramosha is addressing the Chasam Sofer. And Ramosha is saying...
He's saying, I don't know if he's not accepting the Pri Chadosh. He's saying, look, it's a machlekes, but even like the Chasam Sofer, today would be mutter.
Right. So Ramosha is taking the approach that because, as we know, and actually we have Rabbonim in our office who have done much research and continue to do research on this issue on a regular basis, there is very strong government control, and there's a real mirsis that a dairy farm, a farm in which cows are being milked, may not have, not just that they can't milk other animals, you can't have on that farm any other type of animal besides cows. And this is something which is monitored and something that is evaluated on a very, very regular basis. And frankly, no one has ever reported to us that they've gone onto a farm that has cows for milking and that they've ever seen another animal. So this is not just a rule that is in place and is being monitored. It's a rule that everybody follows. You see, not, and frankly, not just in the United States, worldwide. This is something that we've seen in many countries around the world. So Ramosha says, so that creates, just the way I always understood Ramosha, that there's a new category. Ramosha calls it Cholov companies, or what's become popular in the yeshivish world, it's called Cholov Stam. And Ramosha says, Cholov Stam, or Cholov companies, as Ramosha calls it, because of these rules and regulations, are not subject. That's not what the Gemara spoke about. Or maybe saying it a little stronger, that that is equal to Cholov Yisrael. So Ramosha doesn't view it as a contradiction to the Chassam Sofer. Ramosha held that the Chassam Sofer himself would hold that because of these circumstances, there is no concern of drinking that milk, and that's why Ramosha was makel.
I think the lashon of Ramosha is, he says, since he says, if the im ya'aravu chalav behemet tzmeya ye'enshu, they'll be punished. The gam yaskiru es ha'esik, they can close down the business. So vaday mirsisi, they're worried, right? They're fearful to do it, right? And the havei, right? His question: the idea bruri kariya mamish. He says it blibes, like
it falls in the category of chol yisrael. It's regular chol yisrael.
It's like somebody's watching.
So you know, to be completely honest, this is something that is very controversial. What are you going to say controversial? Because there are letters that Ramosha wrote that have been presented, that Ramosha says that Cholov, that if you live in a place where Cholov Yisrael is available, then you should use the Cholov Yisrael. So on one hand, that's Ramosha's opinion regarding, there are letters to that effect. So the tshuva that you just read and the way I described it seems to believe that Ramosha held that it's perfectly fine. But if he held it's perfectly fine, why did he hold that you could, why did he write a letter that if Chol Yisrael is available by Chol Yisrael? On the other hand, it is well known. I know from firsthand, not secondhand. Somebody told me, you know, now the minig is that even the yeshivisha have sometimes non-chsidisha menhagim. So most people, or many people, don't cut the child's hair, a boy's hair, until he's 3 years old. And the minhag in a lot of places is they go to a Rebbe, to a Rav, to Rosh Yeshiva, to have them cut the hair when the child becomes 3 years old. And I know people have told me, I spoke to the person himself, that was by Reb David Feinstein, Zal Gesundzein, brought this family is very close with Reb David. They brought their child to Reb David to have this, take the first snip of hair. And all the Rabbanim and Rosh Yeshiva Rebbes all know you have to give the child a candy. And Rav David told the father of this son, I'm sorry, I know I can't give your son some chocolate in my house, because all the chocolate in my house is Cholov Stam chocolate, which I tell from whom you are, you don't use Cholov Stam. So it's obvious, and Rav David lives in New York, where there's plenty of Cholov Yisrael available. So it's very confusing. What Ramosha really held, was it a b'dieved or l'chatchila? There are different ways of looking at it.
Good. So can I interject here? So the Ramosha in the future says it's like Riya Mamish, but then in Igris Moshe, Yerodeya Beis in Melamed Hay, he seems to reveal why he felt that, let's say, in Yeshivas they shouldn't, even though it's Kiriya Mamish. And here's what he says, and I'm going to read it in Hebrew and English. Mikol makim in a roi lebal nefesh v'hachmir. Why? Does it make sense? He says, roi lemenale yeshivas ktanis. He says the deans of the menale of yeshivas ktanis, which means, you know, boys' schools or girls' schools for that matter, that they sheyitnu l'talmideim chalav Yisrael v'hafshu b'yoyker mamish kedai l'hachmir kizehu me'inyodei chinuch. It's v'chinuch and limud sheyedu shekedai v'roy lebnei hachmer lahachmer afkes yesh rak shashesar. He says, in our chinuch, we should show our kids how much we sort of we exalt the opinion, any chashesar. There's a concept in Shulchan Aruch. There are people who didn't eat from something that even had a hayros chacham.
Right, that's part of what Glad is all about.
Yeah, he says that it shouldn't have a. So he says, I'll to teach your children, you're a shemayim, lahachmer afkish yeshrach, demize yisboinenu lirois ech lira meyisurim. And he says, that's what education is about. B'chal haitzoiz, k'dei lechanech dor neman lahashem lo tairasai. He says, ubinyone chinuch ein latzamts. And when it comes to education, so he seems to be saying that me'ikar adin is mutter, right? And it's hayriya mamish. But, you know, you could send mixed messages. You want to show a chavivas, a havas, a chumris, etc. That's why to do it. Al tinyone chinuch. But halachically, he didn't see an issue here. That's what he says. This is, again, Yeridei Beis Lamedei.
Okay. And that's very borne out by the family's minik.
Yeah, yeah. So for Chol of Yisrael, for Chol of Stam, what we call it, Chol of Companies, Ramesh is Matir, and that's what the OU nems on, right?
Right, that is the OU's position. It's not only Ramesh, for the record, the Chelkas Yaakov felt that way as well, and Rabbi Yoshua ben Soloveitchik obviously felt that way as well, and that's been the position of the OU forever, that we allow companies to use Chol of Companies, we're not Makban or Chol of Yisrael.
Now, let's talk about cheese, cottage
before
cheese.
We talk about cheese, I just want to add a few points.
Yeah.
Because I think if we want to round out the conversation. Number one, when there is an OU product that's Chol of Yisrael, it's labeled clearly Chol of Yisrael. And if it is Chol of Yisrael, we're makbid because we're concerned for the person who eats only Chol of Yisrael, that there should be no Chosha Mishpat as part of Yiddishkeit as well. So the OU doesn't take the approach, well, by us, Chol Yisrael is really not necessary, so we'll give everything the name Chol Yisrael. No. If something's called Chol Yisrael, it's 1,000% Chol Yisrael. Number one. Number two, where many people who are even machmer to only drink or eat Chol Yisrael, where it's become extremely common to ask this question, I would say it's probably the most common question that we at the OU get about different food items is what's known as DE, dairy equipment. And many people, even if they're personally makbid on Chol Yisrael, are not makbid on kalim. And if the keli, that the equipment on which there was Chol of Stam product made, now is clean but wasn't kashered with a full kashering, they will still consume that product. There are those that are machmer. Ramosha, in that question, everybody knows that Ramosha held that even if you're makbid for the chsam sofer or makbid like you just described for chinuch issues, then you don't have to be so machmer. And on kalim, you could rely on that it's fine, that type of milk, and it doesn't require a full fledged kashering. As long as the kalim are clean, that's good enough. And the last point I want to make, I just want to put it out there. Maybe you'll have a different program, maybe with someone else. You know, many people call me and ask me, and they want to even invest in making product Chol of Yisrael. And if we could approach companies to make it Chol of Yisrael, it's really not a practical approach. It's really, really not a practical approach because milk, as we've been discussing, comes from farms. And you need to get milk from many farms to collect it for any factory. If you would need to have mashgichim on every farm to make the food, the milk Chol of Yisrael, because we're certifying these incredibly large companies that use incredible sums of milk from so many different farms, it's virtually impossible. We couldn't even find so many mashgichim, and nobody could afford to pay so many mashgichim. So it's right. Not like we're not doing it because we don't want to do it. It's really not.
So let me interrupt. I always get criticized for interrupting, but otherwise it's we end up with.
It's okay.
Job.
I do it to other people as well.
Okay, so here's what I would ask. Okay, and I would say post coronavirus, this is certainly we see this. Why couldn't you put cameras up,
Excellent question. In terms of cameras, so this has been the most interesting question in the world of Chol Yisrael, because now, and particularly like you say, the world that we all lived in over these last couple of months, that we learned the power and effectiveness of video and cameras and how the whole world communicates that way. So there have been Rabbonim, and this is prior to Corona already, who have approached us and said, it's not a big deal to put in a video camera, and part of Kashrus relies on that to a degree, and all of the milking parlors around the world, that's not such a big deal. You don't need a mashgiach, and that should do the trick. And it's very interesting. Many years ago, a chashev rov in Eretz Yisrael, when I was once in Eretz Yisrael, asked to meet me and said to me that he feels that this is something that the world is ready for. And he said to me that he had discussed this. Rabbi Yoshev was still alive then, and he had discussed it with Rabbi Yoshev, and Rabbi Yoshev agreed with him. And I asked him, so if Rabbi Yoshev agrees, could you please produce a letter from Rabbi Yoshev that he agrees? And he was never able to produce that letter. We at the OU also discussed this question numerous times with Rabelsky Zatzal, and Rabelsky, I myself discussed it with him more than once, and Rabelsky's approach was that if you're going to if you want to be machmer and follow the opinion of Chassam Sofer, so part of following the opinion of Chassam Sofer is Yisrael Re'eu means a Jew being there. So if you want to rely on Ramosha, and as we've been discussing, Ramosha held that it's fine. And we at the OU follow Ramosha's opinion. But if you don't want to follow Ramosha's opinion, you want to be makbid to Chassam Sofer, then the Chassam Sofer means to do it the way the Gemara said it.
Let's say the Mashkiach was watching with a pair of binoculars. Would you say it would be good like the Chassam Sofer?
The Gemara says it. The Gemara says he doesn't have to be in the parlor. The Gemara says even if he's outside.
But he couldn't see it. He could only use binoculars. Would it be good?
I think so. I don't think anybody would disagree.
So what's the difference if it's a screen or it's binoculars?
So apparently, and this is a big issue that even goes on even today in Eretz Yisrael, because you have an issue in Eretz Yisrael. We have Jewish-owned farms, but there's no Jew on the farm on Shabbos. And what they rely on is that they have cameras on those milking parlors that are reviewed Motzoi Shabbos. I've seen where those cameras are. I've seen the screens. The Tanuva has it. Strauss has it. The big dairies in Eretz Yisrael have it. But what they're saying, and I asked, so you see that relying on videos, there's a very big nafka mina. In Eretz Yisrael, those farms are Jewish-owned farms. But the farms that we're speaking about here are not Jewish-owned farms.
But Rabbi Elifet, that's omitting two things. The question is it called seeing or not? So you're saying they consider it seeing. Now they have a different issue. It's Jewish-owned. It's not just. But if we could agree that it's called seeing.
No, they're only relying on it because it's Jewish-owned, so it's less of a child to start off.
But you still need Yisrael Re'eu, right?
Right.
If it's a Jewish-owned farm and an Arab milks it, it's no good, right? You need Yisrael Re'eu. And we're saying that Tznuva relies on the cameras to say that it's Yisrael Re'eu.
Right. And
so
again,
case closed. I rest my case.
And again, Rabbi Yoshev was Mekel, Rav Gross, who gives the Hashgacha on Tznuva today, Ramotcha Gross from Nebrak, Adam Godel Admoid, gives the Hashgacha on that basis. For
the
record, the Eidah Chredis doesn't. The Eidah Chredis will not do it.
So what is that Chredis? What milk do they drink in the Eidah Chredis?
They drink milk that's not from Shabbos.
How do they know? Tznuva has a special
Shabbos. No, that's not a hard way. That's something you can monitor. That's
so they have a non-Shabbos run. Okay, but I never heard of this, honestly. And my point is that all of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael is Saimach on the videos for Shabbos, right?
Yes.
The Mechaba in Shin Zayin, I think it's all the way at the end of Shin Zayin, says that on Shabbos, they Taka used to send Jews there to be Chalav. So you see, today that din of Shin Zayin in Aruch Chaim, they do through videos, and everybody's Saimach. So why don't you now have cameras installed and say, according to all the Paiskim in Eretz Yisrael, that's called Re'eu. Done with problem. And you have the OU, you have a guy who watches. He skips. He watches every.
That would be a problem because we actually do it until today. I get calls from Rabbonim who are not in the factory but have access to the videos of the factories, and they see things and they have issues. And that's easily done now. That's not called super sophisticated.
So that would solve
again,
your problem.
Again, it is a solved problem, but we're looking for a Pesach of great stature to tell us you can label that Chol Yisrael.
I'm telling you, all the Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael.
The Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael have not been ready to take that plunge on non-Jewish owned farms. I've discussed myself with them.
Okay. I mean,
but
by
David,
the way,
you're welcome to speak to them as well.
Another issue, by the way, where this is, and I get questions, you have sometimes, I don't really want to go to wood cameras.
Right, of course. Data Paiskim are actually Mako.
Yeah. Okay, so let's
I wrote a Sefer in Hilchos Yichud many years ago, and many Paiskim, all the Paiskim I spoke to said, you have to have a sophisticated system that covers your entire home. There can't be places that aren't covered by your surveillance system, because then you haven't accomplished. But if you're able to create a surveillance system, which I'm sure is doable, that every part of the home, there's nowhere where it's not covered, there's room to be makel.
By the way, and I would take the argument, Rabbi Elephant, that in a certain way a camera seeing is better, because it could be stored for longer periods. You could rewind. I mean, when they have a baseball game and somebody gets hit with a foul ball or something, they do instant replays, they do, and this and that. So you could really check, and you could examine back, and you have a record of it. I mean, whereas the human eye could be fooled, right? So the argument would be but let's go to cheeses, cottage cheese. And what's going to be the question? The question is that whereas by milk, the Shulchan Aruch does not bring the concept of loy plugin, it's just a chumra of the Chsam Seifa. However, by cheese, the Lashon Rambam is that the Tur brings, and that's what we paskin, that even if it's Hamida Basavim, that it's, in other words, it's an artificial enzyme, right? I forgot the name, microbial.
Yeah.
So that the Goyim said, since they were geyser on all gvinais, we don't care, even if we know 100% it's kosher, there's not a single camel on the whole island that you live, not a pig, not a horse, etc. It's still going to be Asa, because unless a Jew sees it, or according to the Shach, a Jew owns the rennet, etc. So my question is, I know that the OU gives on all these cottage cheeses, friendship, whatever the names are, they give Hechsherim. I'm sure that there's not
Let's back up a drop. I don't know the level of knowledge for all of the listeners.
Yeah, so give a
short introduction to Gevinas Hakam.
Yes.
You know, we just spoke about Chol Yisrael, and we were able to identify, if you have a product that's called Chol Yisrael, that means there was a Mashgiach on the farm where the milk is being milked, and if it's Chol of companies, Chol of Stam, we don't have that. That's on milk. Cheese, there's no difference. You know, people don't realize this. Every cheese that's OU certified, every hard cheese, let me be accurate, every hard cheese that's OU certified has a mashgiach there who's making sure that the rennet that's being put into the cheese, we know the way cheese is made is you take milk, you pour in rennet, it curdles, it hardens, and now you have cheese. And the water that's left, the liquid, is called whey. Whey, or the Gemara calls it Nesuve B'chalva. The reality is, as you correctly just said, there's no machlokes that that's what the halacha requires, even though the reality is, certainly in the United States, all of the rennet that's being used, I should have said this first, why were Chazal makbid on Gevinas Hakam? Because the Gemara says they used to use animal. They used to use rennet. They didn't. They took the kava, the stomach of an animal, and that's how they put it into the milk, and that's how they made cheese. And of course, you have to make sure that the rennet that's being used is kosher rennet, and that's why they didn't. That's why Chazal said you have to have a Jew there to make sure that they're only using kosher rennet. Not only is the halach that you have to have a Jew there to make sure that they're using kosher rennet, but what Gevinas Hakam, the halach, requires is that the Jew be the one to pour in the rennet into the milk.
Rabbi Elephant, I'm interrupting again. The Ramah says you don't need that, and the Shach is Machmer.
Right, and we're Machmer for the Shach. And that's why in all factories, and believe me, I just was on the phone before we spoke this morning, this is a huge issue in our world, you know, because I know that you and I, maybe this is complicated, like to be in shul on Rosh Hashanah and in Yom Kippur. But cows have this funny thing. They give milk 7 days a week. And the factories that make cheese make it 7 days a week. So we need to have mashgichim in these factories. The Chol Yisrael companies need to have mashgichim on the farms. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, no exception. You can't say, well, I need to go to shul. There's no shul. And the same thing, we in the factories that make hard cheese have mashgichim on all of the on all these factories 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And obviously, it's not always easy to find staff to do this. It's not something that most people will want to spend the day. You spend Yom Kippur in a factory watching cheese being made. So we're machmer to have a mashgiach pour in the cheese. The only time we never have a factory that makes cheese without a mashgiach there all of the time on Shabbos. So you can't have the mashgiach. Now everything's automated. So you can't have a mashgiach pressing the button that causes the rennet to pour into the cheese, because that's Chil Shabbos Daraisa, pressing that button. It's electric, everything. So what we do is, we do what the Shach says. You just mentioned the Shach. The Jew takes ownership of the rennet, and by the Jew taking ownership of the rennet, you don't have, we can rely, at least for Shabbos, that he doesn't pour in the rennet. And this is what everybody does. So this is the reality of cheese. So now you started this part of our conversation. So what about the soft cheese, like the
I would just like, and I just would like to note, because I think it's important to note, that the Mishneh Berurah, notwithstanding the Shach's Chumrah, the Ramah holds that you don't have to own the Rennet, or and you don't have to do a Maisi, you just have to see, and the Mishneh Berurah nems on the same way. Okay,
that's certainly something that we can rely on b'di'evid, but it's not something that we do, and certainly we can't have somebody pour it in on Shabbos. There's no het to fulfill Shabbos.
So, Rabbi Elephant, why can't you, and this is just as fascinating the way the world is developing, if the Jew presses the button, it's fine, right? Why can't the Jew press the button that is timed to go 20 hours later at a certain time and it goes...
Okay, that's not the way cheese is made. The way cheese is made is, like, every hour or two is when they set a new run of cheese. So it can't be pre-programmed, and it can't be pre-programmed
that for the next 24 hours.
It's not an exact science. Okay. It's not an exact science, like you know in your house that you need the light to go on in your dining room 12 o'clock when you come home from shul. Here, the cheese is, you know, we're dealing with food. Sometimes it takes a little longer, sometimes it takes a little shorter. It can't be figured out to the minute. So that's why that isn't it's a good eitza, but it's not practical. And again, it's only on Shabbos that we rely on ownership. During the week, we have ownership and actual maisa. And the mashgiach keeps on coming to pour in the rennet or press the button that pours in the rennet. So now back to your question, the soft cheese, the hard, the farmer cheese, the cottage cheese, the cream cheese. So the difference between a hard cheese and a soft cheese is that a hard cheese, you can never get a hard cheese without rennet. And since you can't have a hard cheese without rennet, it falls into the category of Gvinas Akum, which needs the Yisrael's involvement to whatever degree we speak about. Soft cheese doesn't require rennet. You could have, in Europe, people tell me this, they made all sorts of cheese without, they just left it out. You let the milk curdle and you left it out under certain proper conditions with heat or whatever, and it turned into cream cheese or it turned into cottage cheese. So there, since it doesn't require rennet, the din of Gvinas Akum doesn't apply, and that's why you don't need to have a mashgiach at the factory making those cheeses.
But respectfully, you know that the Aruch HaShulchan, as well as the Chachma Sadam, both say that since they made a gzeira by cheese, and like the Rambam writes, that the cheese, it doesn't matter, even if there's no way that they could have mixed in this entire continent, they don't use any rennet that comes from a behemoth, a non-kosher rennet. They only use, you know, a plant-based rennet. He says they made a loy plug, and there's a loy plug. So we have the Aruch HaShulchan, as well as the Chachma Sadam, who says that loy plug extends to soft cheese as well. How does the deal with that?
because we have other Paiskim, Ramosha, Rabbi Yosher Ber, Soloveitchik Tzatzal, who took the opinion, not like them, they said that Chazal's Gezerah was limited to cheeses that need rennet to become cheese.
But
it's a machlokes.
Right. So you're saying that but even somebody who is arguably mekel holds like Ramosha, let's say, legabe milk, because there's a din of mirsis, there is a makim to say that they should be more machmer by cottage cheese, cream cheese, or
absolutely. Those are two separate shilas. The issues are two separate issues. I mean, people who are not necessarily learned in the sugyas sort of make a big chant, Chalav Yisrael and Gevinas Yisrael, but Chalav Yisrael and Gevinas Yisrael are two very different sugyas, two different, very, very, very different subjects that should not be confused.
Right, right. And for soft cheeses, there's more reason to be
machmer, of course. It's absolutely. And again, I want to tell you a fantastic story. Many years ago, the last time the Belzer Rebbe from Eretz Yisrael was here in America, he requested the Rabbi Gnack and I please come see him. He was staying in Borough Park, and he asked that we should please come see him. So we came to see him. It was a fantastic meeting. He said, and we're talking about the OU, et cetera, and he tells us he hears wonderful things about the OU, about our systems, about the people, the Rabbonim at the OU. And he looks at us and he says he thinks that the time has come for the OU to be Machmer Chalav Yisrael. And Rabbi Gnack answered him with a wonderful answer. He says, the OU Hashgacha is not only for the Jews in Brooklyn and in Lakewood and in Muncie. The OU Hashgacha is for Jews throughout the world and certainly around the United States. And the people in our community, there's Chalav Yisrael, there's plenty of Chalav Yisrael available. And as you and I just had this discussion, you know, you want Ramosha held Chalav Yisrael, there may be a chinuch aspect to only use Chalav Yisrael, as you correctly just said, on soft cheeses, there may be the same halacha as on hard cheeses. So you could go to the store and buy Chalav Yisrael cottage cheese and Chalav Yisrael cream cheese and don't rely on any heter. But we're here not only to service those Jews, and they're not going to have that cheese available, and they're certainly not going to have that milk available. And we have a responsibility where there's a halachic basis to what we are doing to service those Jews as well. And that's why we take that approach, of course, based on solid halacha basis, to be mekel, not only to be machmer Chalav Yisrael, not only to be, and to be more lenient on soft cheese as well.
Fabulous, fabulous answer. Okay, let me ask you a question. I'm going to posit a question and a little bit controversial question. Is it possible that even people who are makbid on Chalav Yisrael and don't eat Chalav Stam, right? But on the contrary, when it comes to cheese, they would be able to be mekel. And what's the reason? Because Drama in Yeridei and Kuftes Vav says that a guy who made cheese and Yisrael is watching him, right? Since the guy will not use Chalav Tameh for cheese, because Chalav Tameh doesn't curdle, he says, therefore, the Yisrael watching him, right, means that we could assume that the milk is going to be kosher, and with the Yisrael watching him, it becomes Gevinas Yisrael. So here we have a heter that the guy has a reason for his own best interests not to use Chalav Tameh, and therefore it would be mutter even according to the tzad that there's a suffix that the guy for you would sell Chalav Tameh, but in this case he won't sell Chalav Tameh, and we have no reason to be chayshish for that, and therefore it's mutter even if you would ask a regular milk, because here he's doing it for his own best interests. Kumtais, that let's say a chassidish guy who says, I have no reason do I ever eat Chalav Stam, something like Miller's cheese, here, even according to the Ramah, there would be no chash of Chalav Akam, and in that case, he would be better off eating Miller's cheese than drinking dairy cow milk, like some standard OU milk. What would you think of that svara?
It's a good svara. I would have to analyze it. You caught me a little off guard to be able to answer that. But I want to give you a fact that may have impact on this svara. Many, many people, and it's directly related to what you said, you know, because as you correctly said, and the Gemara already speaks about it, the Gemara speaks about chema, butter, that you don't have to be concerned because it won't turn into milk. It won't turn into butter. Chalav tamei will not harden. And therefore, you don't need to be concerned by butter. So we get the question all of the time after anybody learns that Gemara. I know, as you mentioned earlier, I give it a few times. Whenever we learn the Gemara Masechta Avodah Zarah, the phone is off the hook. So why can't we eat butter that's not Chol Yisrael?
By the way, in Lakewood under a baron, they used to use the government FDA butter. I think when I was in Lakewood, they still used the FDA.
Yeah, I still remember when I also remember in all the yeshivas, they used the government butters.
Those big blocks
even if they
of butter.
Not yeah. Chol Yisrael. That was the minig in all the yeshivas in America. What we have found, however, fascinating, is that many of these companies that manufacture butter use different dairy ingredients that to enhance the flavor or for different purposes in the butter. Some of them will add whey. We spoke about whey earlier. Some of them will add flavors that have real chalav in them, and there's no problem of hardening it because it's only there as a flavor. It's not the actual butter. So that makes it that's what created a new shaila on butter, even though you correctly stated that the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch says that butter can only be made from chalav tahor.
So that's why in the government butter, they don't do that, is what you're saying?
No, now the government butter, you know, I don't know what happened 30 years ago, 40 years ago. It's more than 40, 50 years ago. Just we're all older. We don't want to realize it. Maybe then they weren't using these flavors. I'm telling you what's happening, Bizman is there. We're certifying these butter companies, and we're seeing that they're adding these ingredients.
And what type of ingredients are they?
Well, flavors, pick either flavors that are milchig flavors or whey, whey, in the Subat
Chalva. Very fascinating. Rabbi Elephant,
this is one of the most common questions.
Educational, fascinating to have you on. Thank you so much for your time.
To you too, a gitka benchur for all of us.
Joining us from Hungary is Rabbi Baruch Obalanda. He's the Av Bezdin of Budapest. Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Baruch.
Aleichem Shalom.
Rabbi Baruch, we were speaking about Cholav Stam, and I know in Chabad they're very makbir on it. We've spoken to Shluchim in Uganda and in Siberia that say how when they don't have Cholav Yisrael, they won't drink for months on end. They won't give their kids any milk. And given that the Pri Chadash is Matirit, and Reb Moshe says that when there's Mirsis, today all milk, you know, in Western countries that, you know, are careful about their examinations and worried about their licenses, also have the din of a Cholav Yisrael. In light of that, why is Chabad so machmir?
You mentioned a few things together. I think we should discuss it one by one. First of all, I think it's not only Chabad, it's a lot of poskim, but let's go step by step. The first thing is that, you know, I'm in the field, so I know that today, the kula of Cholav Stam, or which is in Allah, it's called Cholav Nachri, is not a Shaila Drabban, and today it's a Shaila Dereise, because we have Cholav Treifa. And Treifa is Allah and Shechon Aruch, Siman Pei Aleph, that Hayotze Min HaTreifa Dina Ke Treifa, and a lot of the cows went through this little operation, whatever it's called, so it's Cholav Treifa. Rav Belsky, for example, says it's for sure the beetle. I know from the fact that a lot of times there are so much that went through this little operation after birth, whatever, that is a shayla of the eraisa. And I really heard, Taka, that Reb Hirshel Shechter stopped drinking milk.
Yeah, but
I heard that he stopped drinking.
Rabbarach, but you told me it's a few things. The din of Chalav Treif has nothing to do with the din of the Shulchan Aruch of Chalav Yisrael. Chalav Yisrael is that if somebody stands beyad hanachri, if it were Eyu, or if he could stand up, he could see him. It has the din of Chalav Yisrael. Even if the Eder, it doesn't say any place that he has to check that the Eder was, they did give the needle to the stomach, they didn't give the needle to the stomach. That's not halach and hilchos kashrus. You have to be baidik whether
a cow... What do you mean? But the fact is that you have a lot of the cows are treife.
I understand
even when
that.
You want to say,
so,
no, let me connect it to the heter of Remoisha. Remoisha says Mirsus. Mirsus is that if you mix cholov of a pig into, but Mirsus, there's no Mirsus mixing cholov treif and cholov kshere.
It's in Rebaruch.
So meaning when you go into a store and you rely and you say Remoisha allowed, which Remoisha allowed b'shas atchak, you might get cholov treife, which is the eraisa.
But Rebaruch, if somebody goes to a farm and they stand next to a cow and they watch it be milked and the farmer gives him the milk, is it cholov Yisrael? Shulchan Aruch says it's cholov Yisrael. I understand,
or
but that's not a din of cholov Yisrael. That's not, you say, it's not a din. You're saying there's not new shaila now. It's not a cholov Yisrael. It's a din. It's
no,
not,
so,
it could be
so when you have cholov Yisrael... When you have cholov Yisrael, the Rav Amachshir makes sure there shouldn't be cholov treif over there. When you have cholov with the heter of Remoisha, nobody makes sure that you're not going to get cholov treif.
But Rav Herschel Shechter doesn't drink cholov Yisrael because he says the big cholov Yisrael farms do not, in fact, they do allow the needles to the, they give them the needles, etc. So, and that's why he doesn't drink cholov Yisrael. Doesn't drink any milk.
To the best of my knowledge, the whole of Israel do not allow needles. I know in Israel they're very, very makpid. I makpid over here. Wherever I go, I know there's a makpid. I understand. But at least you see that Rav Herschel is taking the problem seriously. But when you allow to drink cholov akum from the store, you might get cholov treifa, which is Isidur Isa.
Let me restate the question. This Chalav Treif Shaila is a relatively new Shaila, right?
Yes.
When Ramesha wrote the Tshuva 40 years ago, 50 years ago, right, there was no Shaila of Chalav Treif then. And at the same time, Chabad was not Tzaymach, not on the Sfar of Ramesha, not on the Pri Chadash. So before Chalav Treif, why not?
Oh, okay, fine. Let's talk history. Okay,
yeah.
Fine. The heter of Rebbeisha, there are mirsus and yediya beruda is like a ria. Is first of all, Rebbeisha himself says for bnei Torah you shouldn't allow it and etc. And there's many tshuvas that Rebbeisha himself states it. And Rebbeisha says noeg ani lahachmir la'atzmi, and the story goes that he devomited the cup of milk that he drank. Etc. So even when you say Reb Moshe, it's not a clear-cut heter, because Reb Moshe himself says you should be machmer. And there's a tshuva in Chelik Ches where it says, if you were machmer, then for sure you shouldn't start to be mekel, because it's considered a neder and more and more. So that's number one. Number two, and a lot of poskim don't accept Reb Moshe's heter. And starting from the Krasnerov, Purare Kuntres, Kavanas Aleiv, Kinyan Teire, Bisrol Vels, Minchas Yitzchak, Beir Moshe, Chelkes Yaakov, Mishnah Alachas, etc. I heard I didn't have it firsthand. They say that the Rebbe once said, and the Rebbe really had big the Recheretz, and he really appreciated Moshe's goyness. The Rebbe said about Reb Moshe's heter, he said, Reb Moshe still thinks that it's like in Russia, where everybody is afraid of the policeman that stands at the corner of the street. Meaning, even the Mirsas himself, Reb Moshe himself, in the next Siman, in Siman Memches, somebody asked him, what is the big Mirsas over here? So Reb Moshe tries to build up a big Mirsas that it's cost a lot of money to give Shoicha to all the workers, etc. Now, I'm talking about the Metzias, not the Halacha. The Metzias is that I'm afraid that the Mirsas is not that big, especially if we accept what the Debrecen Rav and the Chelkes Yaakov bring, that the cholov of a chamoir helps keep the milk fresh. He says even a tiny amount keeps the milk fresh. He says, you know, I myself saw it. So I don't know how much the mirsis works. People come here to hunger, you know.
Hello, you think that in America they're putting chamoir milk, donkey milk into the milk?
I'm saying the Debrecen Rav and the Chelkes Yaakov bring it on.
I'm just asking you. You live in the
room.
Do you think that
what I do know, and this is from Hungary, that there's no mirsis. There's no mirsis.
Okay, that could be. That's Kenzine.
There's no mirsis. I mean, the fact that when nobody's afraid of the policeman in the corner of the street is a fact. It's no big mirsis. Some people are you know, nice people and, you know, do things the right way, and some people play around and, you know, otherwise we wouldn't have needed so much hashgacha and a lot of things if everybody would have been, you know, such straight people. So the whole hatter of mirsis is, I don't know how strong it is, but it's the facts.
Okay.
The Pri Chodesh also, you know, especially the Chassam Sofer says very, very strongly that, you know, you cannot, we, B'nai Ashkenaz, cannot follow the Pri Chodesh, because it's considered, for us, it's considered a Doiraisa, that we accepted the day that it's Dovesh B'minyan, and Dovesh B'minyan ain't a bottle, so we cannot allow to follow the Pri Chodesh. So this is the halacha side of it, but then we have if we want to call it the mystical side of it, that the poets can bring is the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe in Sefer HaMamorim Yiddish, Amud 57. He brings the story of the Alter Rebbe that somebody started having sfeikas in the Muna, and it turned out the Alter Rebbe said that he was nechshel in Cholov Akum. Really, this halacha, this we find already in Shulchan Aruch in Ramah. Simon Pei Aleph Siv Zion. The Chol of Nochris, I'm talking about the person. Chol of Nochris, Metamtem Halev, Umoidlid Loiteva Ra. And the Ramah continues, even if it's Beheter. Somebody ate the Dover Osir Beheter, it's also Metamt Mazik Loi Bezik Nusei. So this is meaning, even though it's only an Issa Rabbanan.
We see this from Moshe Rabbeinu, that they didn't let him be Menik from a Nochris. And so from that, the Shulchan Aruch Nemzon, that why? Because it's metamtem as halev, and even if it's done to a child who has no din of kiyum mitzvahs for an infant, right? And even so,
yes,
it's metamtem as halev because
and even more
because it's
even
fresh.
When the menekes ate it beheter, the Shachan Taz point out, even if she ate it beheter, it's still mazik loy beziknusay.
Yeah, but that's only if it's
so,
treif, not if it's not treif.
Yeah, but Chol of Nochris is not treif. Forget, Shulchan Aruch said Chol of Nochris is the same like Chol of a Yisraelis. And it's still Metamtem Halevi Moile Loi Tevara.
So why is it Metamtem as Halevi if there's nothing else there?
Over there, probably, because it comes from a not Jewish source.
I'm saying, so there's some type of a din that if it's...
No, obviously when it's mutter, it's mutter. For example, Yisrael Ro'ei, or there's no question, there's no reason to be Machmir because Metamtem is no, because that's not the Isser. I'm talking about, you know, some people might think that it's only an Isser the Rabbanan, and it's only, so you say, listen, there's a big problem of Timtem Amayach Valev, and interesting that the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, especially today when a lot of children get mixed education, Ma'urev Toivara, you have to be even more careful with Timtum Amayach V'Alev.
What does he mean with that? Explain that.
It means that not everybody learns Al Taharas HaKoydesh, and they don't only learn Limudei Koydesh, they also learn Limudei Choyl, and, you know, sometimes they get a lot of mixed messages. So, more than in the olden times. That's why you have to be even more careful that the Lev should be able and should be able to accept and the right message, and not get mixed up.
Okay.
It's also important to point out, by the way, that the Tzemach Tzedek, which is the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, also is of the opinion of the you know, against the pre-chodesh that you have to be machmer in chol of hakum. Interesting enough, he brings even that sometimes he maybe even we should yesh lochush bevade ledas rabbeinu tam. There's also a problem of gilui. So he brings like five different reasons why you still have to be the choymer inyan of chol of hakum.
Rabbi Oberlander is telling us that originally one of the reasons is because they used to keep the liquids in open containers, and they were afraid that a snake went into it and it put its poison into the milk, right? And today we're not choshish for, it's called nikur, the lashon of the gemara, lashon of Shulchan Aruch. And today we're not choshish for nikur because there are no snakes around. So he's saying that the Tzemach Tzedek said we're still choshish for the das of Rabbeinu Tam.
That is even nikur, even today. Like the Tzemach Tzedek is also very machmer, so that's another point why Lubavitch is so much machmer in chol of akum.
I hear. Okay, you're saying again because they don't. You don't think that there's mirsis b'zmanaze. You don't think that certainly in Hungary you say there's no mirsis. And
first of all, there is no mirsis is a big question. And a lot of folks can say the mirsis doesn't solve the problem because if we say it's a dovish b'minyan, and even if it's bot la tam, loy bot la gzeire, then even if you know you say today that you don't have to be afraid you might mix, but still the gzeire is still there.
No, but Reb Moshe writes, he's saying light the prichadash, you don't need the svara of mirsis. He's saying even light the cham seifa, that it's a dovish b'minyan. He says, since there's mirsis, the mile of Yisrael Reyeu is that it creates mirsis. So he says the mirsis that's supplied by the fact that he's going to lose his license.
I'm sorry, for I mentioned
the same thing. I'm saying, Reb Moshe is going, even if you hold it, some cipher, he's still holding it.
Yeah, Reb Moshe goes, even when we think it's a dovish b'minyan and it's a gezeira, so he thinks, But it has to be stressed again and again that Reb Moshe writes many times that, you know, yeshivas shouldn't have chol of nachi, and b'nei Torah should be machmir, and you should only be mekel b'sha'as hadchak. So, you know, Reb Moshe is not a blanket statement.
Yeah, but say, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that some people try to bring in also the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish also said this svara that it might be some type of mirsis, but the mirsis of a different point. And then there's different Rabbanim that say that the Chazon Ish said that he really didn't mean to be matir. I guess it was just Lepilpula. He just brought her up as a point, but he didn't think la halacha that you could be mekel because of this.
So are all shluchim takamakbit on this? Or is it only like the chassid, you know, the real? Is it like this, really, like everybody in Chabad pretty much? Is that niskabel?
Yes. Like every charedishi, I believe, is machbit. I'm talking about chassidishi for sure.
Yeah, very interesting.
All chassidim are machmir, and I don't know any chassidim that are mekel in chol of akum.
Yeah. Well, Rabbi Oba, I would think, Rabbi Oberlander, I don't know if it's possible, but my hargosha is that, let's say, there's a few things that Chabad is machbir in, like really a lot. And I think one is, you know, beard, right? And the other one is chalav stam, right? And my hargosha is that they knew, sort of, that the Rebbes knew that they would be sending people to, you know, Chabad is like B'nai Gadu, B'nai Ruvain. They, you know, there's the Aseres HaShvatim, there's B'nai Gadu, B'nai Ruvain that said, Baruch Marchiv God. The Goyin says that they wanted to be Marchiv, the Gvul of Kedusha in the world. So when you're sending people, and they were Goyle Rishon, really, you know, B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain, and Chazal say why, because they were machdis themselves into Sakana. And my hargasha was always that Chabad was particularly machbid on these two things, is because they knew that they would be sending their people, you know, into the Sukkindika places, and they wanted them to have an extra shmira for you know, we have paspalta, you know, shalaylas chatin bahem and this and that. When you send a shliach to remote places and he's one person, I was in places where the shliach said he doesn't have a minion practically the whole year except for a Shani Yom Kippur. The Rebbe said these are things that add a particular shmirah. Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, you could always add psychology to the halacha, but but the halacha.
You call it psychology, and I call it tamei mitzvahs.
I think it's a psychology of the thing, you know. I guess at university people might think like this, but you know, if we're talking about halacha and poiskim, you know, from the you know from. All the, you know, from the Chelkis Yaakov to the Bistrol Veltz to Krasnerov to all these, they were not afraid of sending the people away because until today they don't send people away. But it's, you know, but it could be also because it's you see it so strongly because Lubavitcher, the Friedrich Lubavitcher, a previous Lubavitcher, was the one that wrote out this story in the Sefer HaMamarim about that it brings sfeikis in the Munah. But don't forget, for example, the Aruch HaShulchan writes also very strongly about the Isser of Chol of Akum. He brings a story that some business people went to drink very very geschmack coffee, and it turns out that it was like Bosser Nevela or whatever. You know, he writes very strongly that Peiris Gedish Ochan and Nochash, you have to be so careful with it. There's another point which I should stress, is that Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has this point that you should not be makel with the Gezeiras. He's talking about the Gezeira of Bishul Nochri. He says, because, you know, the Tam was Mipshum Ben Oseyem. So we see so much mixed marriage today, he says, because we're too much makel, we have too many Hatayrim for Bishul Nochri. He says, don't rely on all Hatayrim. A heter is a heter, but keep the iser because the iser is very helpful. So some place can bring the same point also by chol of akum that has also to do with Bnei Seyem. So that connects to the psychology you mentioned before.
Yeah. Well, Reb Baruch, it's always an honor to have you on with us to explain the shita of Chabad and the Heiliger Rebbes.
Yasher koyach, negmar chasim etayve.
Negmar chasim etayve, kol tov.